Hello, everybody. Welcome to True Crime Predators with your host, me, Kathy Cassidy, and I am a clinical forensic therapist. Today, we're going to talk about a forever imprinted memory in blood stain in my brain. On that note, this is a trigger warning as the content is primarily violent based and sexual assault. So if you're sensitive to that topic, please bypass this podcast. And also, you guys be aware of what time you're listening to these kinds of things if you're sensitive to that. I know many people like myself and a lot of others go to sleep listening to these kinds of things, and it doesn't have a great impact on us. But if it does affect you, please, you know, don't listen to this at a time where it's going to affect your sleep or your work or whatever you need to complete the rest of the day. Okay, here we go. So this is a time of my work. And remember, you guys, things are mixed up or changed out to protect the privacy of the victims and actually the offenders. Just in respect to the victim, I'm not here to blow anybody out of the water. It would be absolutely wrong and also unethical of me. So, but they are not mixed up to the point where it loses the integrity of the story by any means. Okay, so this story happens when I am working as a sex offender therapist for the parole division. And that was the name of my title. And that title comes from working only with sex offenders, doing a specific type of therapy geared towards sex offenders. And this, well, where I worked and the population I worked with, these were all men, and they were court mandated to sex offender specific therapy as part of their parole conditions. Okay, so with that, this population, they have all either had a trial or taken a plea bargain. They've all been found guilty. They've all served their time sentence in prison, and they have all met whatever criteria was set to be eligible for parole. And then they were granted parole. And with parole for sex offenders comes with a very specific layout of conditions set for them. So it's called their parole conditions. And that, I mean, a lot of anyone going on parole has conditions set for them, but sex offenders have a very different type of conditions as far as like no pornography. When I worked there, this is a long time ago, no computer devices, no phones that had access to the internet, no being around minor children, meaning under 18, even if they're 17 and 11 months and 29 days. No, the answer is no. The list goes on and on, but you know, they can't be within a certain distance of minors or a park or anywhere children congregate. So like a McDonald's with a children's playground, things like that. Libraries, depending on the state, depends on how many feet. But this is just an overall general idea of what their conditions consist of. And those can be tailor-made for the specific offender, if they have, you know, a certain issue that is going to possibly present a high risk for them to reoffend. Okay, so and with that, you guys, even the adult offenders, meaning grown-ups, obviously they're all grown-ups, they're all over 18, the offenders, who have offended an adult, they also carry the same stipulations in their conditions where they cannot be around minors also. And this is a big issue for offenders, especially the adult rapists, because they, and I've said this in every podcast, there is a hierarchy within the sex offender population. The adult offenders do not want to be associated with the pedophiles or the child offenders. They don't like or understand and don't agree with the fact that even though their victim is over the age of 18, that they still can't be around anyone under 18 and have the same stipulations as far as like how far away they can be. And a lot of these guys, a lot of them have kids. And even the ones who are older, they have grandkids or nieces and nephews, or as you can imagine, most people have minor kids in their family. So the offenders who still have family in their lives, which a lot of, most of them do, I think I've only met one in my entire career where their entire family cut them out. So when there's a picnic or a barbecue or a family function or holidays, they can't go. And every blue moon, from what I've seen, they would have to request special permission from their parole agent and us. Everyone would have to sign off on it that they're safe to go. Well, safe being used loosely, that we agree that they can go. And then we set up 8 million parameters to have, it's called the safety plan. Okay. So enough of that. I just want to give you guys like a background of it. All right. So here is a period of my career where I'm working for parole, and I will describe it every podcast. So those of you who've heard it, just skip this part. So the way that sex offender therapy was set up, we were in the city of Chicago and deep in the city. Our office was in the basement of the parole office, and there was a door outside, like it's a whole, you know, street on a busy street, and there's all this brick wall of the building, and then all of a sudden there is a metal door that's flush with the brick, and the sex offenders would line up along the wall, or, you know, sometimes they would stand around. They didn't have to line up, but that is kind of what they did. Maybe they were used to being in prison and doing that lineup thing. I actually just thought of that right this second. So they would line up against the wall. One of myself or one of my colleagues, we would go up, open the door, let them in. They would all shuffle downstairs into the descending basement of hell. And that's what it was. It was, I felt like it was your soul was descending. Just very dark, dark, dark energy. No windows, no way out other than that door. And then on the opposite side to go upstairs to get out. The overhead lights were the beautifully warming fluorescent lights. So it just felt not a good feeling in the building, you guys, but it matched the work you're doing. So it's not like you're working with like brand new babies. You know, you're working with rough stuff. So I guess it matched. And there was, you know, when they get down the stairs, there was what I use the word loosely, a lobby, which it wasn't. It was just a room. And we had like a 1950s metal desk. And at that desk, there was a clipboard with a pen for them to sign in, because they had to go to their sex offender groups. It was court mandated. And if they didn't show up without a very valid reason or permission to miss from their parole agent, their ankle monitor, they all had ankle bracelets on, would go off, and it would alert everybody that they have absconded. They are not where they're supposed to be. Everyone goes, not us, but parole agents and everyone goes into alert mode to finding out where is he. So they call the guy, try to figure that out, right? So them showing up is crucial. So if they don't show up, we, the sex offender therapists, have to find out from their parole agent, is there a reason they're not there? And if there's not, then everybody, you know, starts figuring out where they're at. If they just blew it off, they face the potential of being violated and going back to prison to serve out the rest of their sentence, and the parole is revoked. Because parole is a luxury to some people. Some people prefer to serve their time sentence and get out and be done with it and be free. A lot of people can't wait to get out, and they'll serve with all these conditions, and it's very hard to have a successful parole for sex offenders, in my opinion, is definitely set up, I think, for failure. But, and I don't think, you know, I'll just shut my mouth on that. Anyways, so, all right, so Everyone comes into group, everyone sits in a circle. Myself and my counterpart is usually a male. And in this case where I worked, it was only a male because I was the only female. We had a very small staff. So myself and my counterpart, who I adored, he was awesome. My supervisor there was one of my favorite supervisors of my life. I absolutely loved him. I learned so much from them. Eternally grateful. So this is the beginning of my career in forensic psychology. So I am, you know, in this period that I'm going to talk about right now, I was very, very new. So I didn't know all of the offenders' entire story. Part of their treatment, you guys, is they have to tell their entire crime from start to finish, which means that it is from when they started fantasizing about it to setting the plan to the actual acting out, like the actual sex crime, after the sex crime, when they got caught, and all the way up until they're sitting in front of you. And we have as many documents as possible to verify what they're saying, like police reports, victim statements, court reports, pre-release evaluations, so much material we have. And we use that to compare when they're telling their story from start to finish to see if they are being 100% accountable. They cannot and are not supposed to lie about anything. So you can imagine the introductions, which is what they're called, could take a very long time. Because when they, you know, a lot of the parolees or the sex offenders start out, they are still in denial and they don't want to take accountability. So they have to go through their crime from beginning to end until they get it right. And we're there to help them with this. And it's not always pleasant. Like my counterpart, he was extremely hard on them. I mean, he would yell at them and it would get extremely heated, uncomfortable. That's not the way I did it, but that's the way he did it. And, you know, everybody's different. Okay, so, and remember, I already had a master's in counseling psychology, so, like, I already knew how to do therapy, but this isn't therapy. That's why I got the forensics degree, the master's in forensic psychology, because working with inmates or anything with law enforcement is a very different approach than regular therapy. So, in regular therapy, you would never call your client a liar, or call them out and scream at them. Like, that would never, ever happen. Ever, I hope. But in this type of therapy, you know, I've said in the other podcast, there's a running joke in that field that how do you know when a sex offender is lying? And the response is because their lips are moving. So they're known to be or thought to be excessive pathological liars, because they're hiding. They know what they've done is illegal and socially pretty unacceptable. For the most part, most people aren't fans of pedophiles except for each other. They love each other. They understand each other. But thank God our society does not accept that. So they live in lies. And so lying comes very natural to them. Okay, back to the story. So everyone piles into group one day. There is a guy who sits to the left of me. They can sit wherever they want, but because humans are, you know, creatures of nature. I mean, oh my gosh, what is it? Creatures of habit, not creatures of nature. They're creatures of habit. Most people tend to sit in the same spot every week. So to the left of me, a couple seats over, is this man. We're going to call him Bill. Bill is probably in his 60s, I would say. Looking more like his late 70s. He's white guy, probably 5'10-ish, white, like that gray hair that almost looks white, like a horseshoe hair. I remember I'm changing stuff, but not greatly. His skin is so weathered. His face, like he kind of looks like a farmer, like an old farmer, like he's been in the sun most of his life with not a drop of sunscreen. Like, the creases in his face are very thick and defined, like the lines. They're not fine lines. They're deep, gutted lines. And then he has, this is the most defining feature, he has these ice blue eyes, and one of them goes one goes straight forward, moves as directed by the brain, and the other one is floating, so a lazy eye. But so, So his eyes were so scary, so scary. Like, I just, when he talked about his crime for the first time in my presence, because he had already been a client there for a long time, and so when he did his introduction for the first time in front of me, the only thing running through my brain when he started and when he finished was, I mean, the woman that, the victim, which was an adult woman, having to see that face is so terrifying. I mean, the whole experience, obviously, by being offended, being the victim of sexual abuse, is horror. I mean, a top tier worst thing ever. And then you get someone who looks like he could be in a scary movie, even beyond. He's just so terrifying looking. And his voice is like really gruff and deep and just, I hope I'm painting the picture. Wears like Dickies, those kind of pants, but like hanging so low in the crotch area, you know, just that kind of guy. It was like, I think he wore like not flannel shirts, but those checkered ones. I don't know what they're called, like gingham kind of thing. Too big on him. You know, he just, oh, God, he was so scary. His fingernails were dirty all the time. Okay, so it's his turn, Bill's turn to do his introduction. And he is not a friendly guy. He's a crabby, crank, mean, but he knows his role in therapy with us because it's court-ordered. They can't just flop off at the mouth like that. At least with us, when they do their sex offender therapy attached to parole, because it's free through the county. So they're probably on a different level than if they're going to a private practice for therapy, which we'll talk about that another day, the differences. All right, so Bill's turn to do his introduction. I'm already terrified and he hasn't even opened his mouth. So here it goes. So Bill has been married several times at the time of his crime, right? He was, and you know, he admits this and it's documented that he was very abusive physically with all of his wives. So when this happens, he is with his wife and they go to a hotel. They were traveling somewhere and they stopped at a hotel on their way for an overnight for their on road trip. You know, they pull up to a hotel and it's one of those motels where, you know, the stairs are outside, they're concrete, they go up and then you go down the little sidewalk upstairs with the railing, but it's all outside. And then the doors flush with like same thing with the wall and you go into your room and you have the window next to your door that you can see in or out of your room onto the streets, or someone can see fully in your room. So they're in that kind of a motel. So they get all their stuff. Their room is on the second floor. They go up to their room, you know, put all their stuff down, open their windows. Now, they start, I don't recall, and I don't, it's not even relevant. The two, Bill and his wife, get into a pretty big argument, turns into a screaming match, mostly him screaming probably, and he leaves. He gets so upset with his wife that he leaves. Now he goes walking down the hotel, the motel stairs outside, and he's about to go back to his car. I don't know if he was leaving or what he was doing. And I don't even know in his head if this was true because, okay. So he's walking down on the first floor, the ground level, and he's walking towards his car, and he passes one of the rooms where the window was, the curtains were fully open. So as he's walking, he can see in the window and he sees a woman in there and she is taking off her clothes in the bathroom. Like he could see through the angle, the whatever the angle was, he could see her. You guys, what does he do? He notices. I mean, I'll remember, this all happens so fast. You're walking. I'm describing it slow, but it's in milliseconds. So he sees her. What does he also see? This is the warning for you guys. Please learn from this. This door leading into her motel room had the latch sticking out. So you guys know what I mean. You know, when you go to a hotel, they have the latch on the upward part above the handle. And you can put the latch forward and then it won't open. Or you can open the door, slide the latch in, and then you can prop your door so you can go get ice or go get something and you don't have to bring your key. That's how her door was. Just the worst timing for this poor woman. So he immediately, like a friggin' sniper, busts in her door. I mean, it's unlocked, but bust meaning he plows through it like he's a military guy just shoving through, shuts the door, puts the latch on, and dives forward for this woman. He said, like, it was so fast, and he had so much rage in him from the argument with his wife. He was just, you know, already on a 10, and all that anger came out. So he, you know, runs up to the woman. She's naked, getting in or out of the shower. I don't know, but she's in the bathroom naked. And this is very bad. And this is the stuff that we listen to every day, over and over and over and over until they got it right. He took the woman and he dropped her to the ground and got on top of her, straddled her. And he took like both sides of her hair with his hands and started like smashing her head into the ground in the bathroom. So it's not carpeted. It's that like glass tile or ceramic, whatever. I don't know the material, but you guys know what I'm talking about. It's like a concrete, basically. So he smashed her head into the ground enough times that she completely, no screaming, nothing. Because she was screaming. He wanted her to shut up. So he is violently smashing her head into the ground, which is not really the approach to ask somebody to be quiet. But again, none of this is normal. Eventually, I don't remember how many smashes there were, but I know there were multiple. She's completely quiet. So he proceeds to rape her. Now she is not moving. She is not doing anything. He kind of is thinking she's dead. So he, you know, even though she's dead, completes his sexual gratification, which is insane. You guys, this was my number one question to the violent rapers. At what point did you get an erection? Because I know you didn't have an erection going into the hotel room. I know you couldn't have got an erection in a millisecond of seeing her naked. You run in, slam the door, you go up to her, hit her to the ground, however you get her to the ground, I'm sure it's violent. And you start slamming her head into the ground. When did you get an erection? Like, what part of that was exciting sexually? Where's the arousal? And that is, for me as a clinician, that was the most telling information. And I can't think of one offender that had an immediate answer. That would stump all of them. Like, oh gosh, when did it? Because it's very telling. You know, did you already have an erection? You were going around looking for someone? Did you get an erection when you saw the naked person? Did you get an erection when you're slamming their head? When they were naked and you had to force yourself to get an erection, like how did this come about? And it speaks to a lot to their sexual deviance and their arousal type. So this story is just so bad. So he, you know, proceeds to rape her, finishes. She is not moving. She is doing nothing. He thinks she's dead. So when he completes, he gets up, gets dressed, takes off out of the room, straight back up to his wife upstairs. He runs in the room with her and he's like, come on, we got to go. Pack it up. Like, she's unpacking. He's like, pack up. We have to go. Now, you know, they're only there for one night. So she's like, what's going on? Now, remember, they had just had a fight. So he's like, we just have to get out of here. I honestly, you guys don't remember the reason. And again, that's not really that relevant. So, she's listening because he's a bulldog and an abuser. So she starts putting everything back together and he's yelling like, come on, let's go, let's go. And they go, you know, they leave the hotel room. They go down the stairs. They have to walk past the victim. She's now the victim. The victim's hotel room, because they have to get to their car and their car is past her hotel room. So they go and he's, you know, hightailing it out of there. They get in the car. He gets in. She gets in. All the stuff is in. Shut the doors. And before he could start the engine, the hotel room door of the victim opens. She is naked and bloody all over. And this woman comes walking out, stumbling, confused, dazed, probably in shock. She probably, I don't know, couldn't feel the pain because I picture just like a zombie, just walking, bleeding, like my heart, you know, and you're in there as a therapist, like you have to keep it together. In my heart, I'm just like, your heart just feels like paper just tearing all over. Like, what? It's just shattering to even imagine these things play by play by play. It's like when you hear on the news, oh, someone was sexually assaulted. This man raped this woman. It's horrible. But you can never imagine these details because it's crazy. We don't think like a predator and a violent rapist. So you hear rape and I think we picture like the actual unconsensual sex, you know, intercourse, not sex, rape, but intercourse. We don't picture the buildup of like how he saw her, how he got in, how he got her there, what happened to her during. It's just so crazy to hear these details for the first time. And, you know, you need your Botox because you have to straight face it. And there is no, like, no shaking your head, no disgust, no shock, no tear, nothing. Keep it together. So, you know, I'm listening and I'm just like, holy mother of Mary, dear Jesus, Lord, what is this world? Because I'm new at this. Now I'm well aware of what this world is. But this woman comes out. And where does she go, you guys? Oh, my God. She goes up to his car asking for help. She's like, help, help. And ends up going to the woman, the wife's side. Help me. And bleeding naked. He, Bill, tells her, let's go. Cranks it into reverse and hightails it out of that hotel. And that was the story. And this guy in particular, he had multiple victims by the time he got caught. That was the victim he got caught for. I don't remember or know how he got caught, but I know he did get away from the hotel. Probably it was on camera. I don't know. But can you imagine? Oh, I just like, thank God he left her. Because she clearly didn't know that she was literally going up to the rapist and his wife for help, because he could have easily thrown her in the car and done anything he wanted to her. Yeah, maybe he would have got caught, but that's not the point. She could have had more sexual trauma. He could have killed her. He could have tormented her. He could have sold her. Like, it could have, shocking to believe, it could have been worse. And I just think, like, what were the chances of this woman coming out at the very moment they were at the car, to the very person that did it? Some of these stories, you guys, it's just like, it's shocking to some of the things are just like, the timing is so incredibly shocking of the way things, the way people get caught or the things that happen. So this woman, you know, he did get found guilty of that crime. And then, like I said, there were several others that he was accused of. He was a serial rapist, which most of them are, but not most of them don't get caught for all of them. He had, and here he was, remember this, he is sitting on, in, you know, he's on parole. So he, despite the dozens of sex crimes that are violent and heinous, he's out on parole. Sit with that and just marinate in that horror. The most important takeaway of this story: do not ever leave your hotel door propped with anything. The latch, nothing. Don't turn the double lock. Bring your key. It takes 1 second. Don't do that. There are people looking for that. There are people who stumble across it. There's people like him. Just don't do it. It's not a big deal. Even if it was a big deal, don't do that. Please. Please. I have shared this, the bottom line of this story, to my entire family. Nobody does that. I don't care if you travel every day. Flight attendants, I know, because I've had flight attendant clients, they're trained not to do that. People who are traveling a lot, people who never travel, don't ever, ever, never, not for 1 second, ever, never do that, ever. It's not worth it. I mean, nothing's worth it. But this is such a simple prevention, which is the point of me sharing all of the horrors, is if I just told you, you guys, make sure you, you know, don't use the latch or the double lock. Just bring your key. You'd be like, eh. You know, maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't. Probably you wouldn't, because it wouldn't stand out in your mind. But when I tell you what can happen and the details of what can happen, I hope to God you learn something from this. And I mean, we all kind of know that, but I hope it's stamped in your brain. Tell your families, tell your friends, don't use the lock. I mean, don't use the latch or the lock. Bring your key, even if you're getting ice, even if you're going to the next door room because your friends, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Bring your key. If you forget your key, you get locked, get another one from the office. Bring your key always, you guys. Always, always, always. So that man, I don't know where he is now. That's a long time ago. I should look him up. Last I knew, he was free. So these guys do get out. They do complete their parole sometimes. Even if they get violated, then they complete their time sentence and they're free in the world. So be careful. Be very aware. This is not to scare you into submission, scare you into not leaving your house. It is simply to make you aware so you can do things different to protect yourself and your families. And that's the best we can do. You know, we can't stop sex offenders because they're sick, but we can do things, the people who aren't sick, to try to stay safe and not give them our lives on a platter, you know, no easy access. All right, you guys, I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. And for anyone who made it through this, you know, just be grateful that you're safe. If you have been through this, please, you know, go and get trauma therapy from a trauma specialist. Work through it. Find ways to get your brain to a place of healing so that you can be the best person you can be after these types of things happen. And like I always tell you guys, the name of my book that I'm still working on, I need a professional editor. If anyone knows one, tell me. The name of my book is called Emotional Homicide, because to me, sex crimes committed with a victim at any age, age one day old to age death, is an emotional homicide. It's a murder of the mind. And we have to take care of ourselves, be safe. And if we do experience this type of thing, we need to get help to help us be okay as we can be, and not let these predators rob us from any more than they already have. All right, you guys, stay safe. I appreciate all of you. If you want to contribute to the page, I don't have a subscription option, but I do have a contribution button that you can contribute if you want to, are able to, and if you're not, I still love you, and we're still doing this work. All right, I'll see you on the next one.